Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and the Christian person today lives among skeptics. Skepticism about Christian claims is more and more the default position across society and within our families. Our topic today, how to talk to a skeptic, is meant to help you share the good news of Christian faith in a way that might be most helpful to the skeptic in the family or at work or anywhere. 888-318-7884 is our number. That's 888-318-7884. If you have questions about how to share the faith with skeptical friends and family, please give us a call. Our guest this hour is my good friend, Don Johnson. Don hosts a weekly program on the Immaculate Heart Radio Network, where he and I sometimes work together as part of an on-air team called Kalen and the Knuckleheads, and we were not Kalen.
We were not the Kalen part.
We were, you figure out who we were in that. In addition to his radio work, Don is an author, speaker, and filmmaker. After spending more than 20 years in Protestant evangelistic work, Don entered the Catholic Church in 2015. High five on that, Don.
Thank you very much. In.
His latest film is Convinced, and his latest book is How to Talk to a Skeptic, an easy-to-follow guide for natural conversations and effective apologetics. Don
well
Johnson, thank
well
you for being here with us.
Good to be here, Cy. Thanks for having me.
For those who are watching on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, I am holding up Don's book, How to Talk to a Skeptic. So you divided it up into three parts, essentially.
I'm glad you remembered that. I got to think. You know how you write a book and then
now you can't remember what the three parts were?
No, okay.
You
sure.
Started from
just
the more generally philosophical and you moved toward the more practical. Is it starting to come back
it's
to you now?
It's coming back slowly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
that's true.
So what would you say? Let's just do it this way, Don. Since you can't remember your own book, How to Talk to a Skeptic. What's the thing? Like, what's the key to this thing?
Yeah, I don't know if there is a key, but I do think there is an overall approach that we can take to skeptics, starting with the notion that we're going to try to understand what their starting point is rather than what ours is. I think we do a lot of trying to argue for why I think you should become Christian or become Catholic or whatever. Like, I have these reasons in my head,
yeah,
and they should be appealing to you.
Right.
But they're not. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I'm speaking to you based on my presuppositions about where you are.
Right.
Probably wrong about that. And two, I maybe don't quite understand what it's going to take for you to become a Catholic. And we spend a lot of time thinking, well, if I wasn't a Catholic, this would be appealing to me. Like, this argument would just be knock them down. This would get me. And then we wonder, well, why didn't that work? I mean, why doesn't that appeal to someone? And I think we're not spending enough time really understanding where the other person is.
You know, that kind of straightens something out for me, because a lot of times you hear people kind of denigrate the idea of dialogue. Like, we're supposed to be evangelizing. We're not supposed to be dialoguing. But you're saying dialogue is part of the evangelizing process. You dialogue in order. Well, I mean, not maybe
yeah,
not in
I mean,
order.
I don't see how you can evangelize if you don't understand.
Yeah.
I could say the language of the other person, but when I mean the language, I mean their whole worldview. Like, how are they understanding the world? How are they then understanding what I'm trying to say to them? And we so often, I think, are talking on different levels. Like, we have this long discussion and we think, man, that just didn't go anywhere. Like, that was fruitless. And if anything, it just made them angry at me and now I'm frustrated. And I mean, maybe it was even worse that I had that. But it's because we're talking to someone that doesn't actually exist, right? Like, we have this idea in our minds of what they think,
right,
who they are. And it's just not correct often.
And how much do you think that the other person, say the person who we may be wanting to share the good news with, is listening to someone who doesn't exist as well? That is, they have an image of what a Christian is, and it has a certain – like, I can't tell you as a Catholic how many times people have come at me with arguments about how the Bible is not literally true, and I'm like, I know. The Bible – I mean, not that I'm going to say the Bible is not literally – but there's something in the Bible. That's not literally true. You know, okay, well, I am not a biblical literalist. I believe the Bible is the word of God, but – God has a whole variety of ways of speaking, and some of them are poetic.
Don't necessarily have to buy that the earth is 6,000 years old.
So that when I say, you know, something about God, they're thinking, oh, he's talking about a white bearded guy in the sky, and haha, that's so weird. But so we both have a preconceived notion about one.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe.
And actually, some points in the book are starting to come back to me, Si. So
your own book is returning to you. I are a knucklehead.
I have
man.
A big section on this because before we tend to start, here's my argument or here's my message, right? Yeah. And that actually comes way late in the book. It's the last thing you do. Before you do that, you have to understand where they are. But then you have to take a lot of time trying to ask them where they think you are.
Yeah.
Right? You know, right? How do they understand the Christian message? How do they understand your position? And often, you're right. I mean, most of the time, I have actually yet to meet a skeptic who understands, who doesn't believe, but understands Christianity in exactly the same way I do.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Right. They're right. Just not out there. And so before we're going to get into some sort of debate, I need to establish, all right, well, what do you think? Well, I think that I have to buy that science is bunk and that the earth is 6,000 years old and God dropped a book out of the sky that I just have to believe based on no evidence. And if I don't do that, he's going to torture me in hell forever. Okay, well, we can discard that because I'm not with you on that either, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just what you're saying. Yeah, really, there's a lot of misunderstandings on both sides.
888-318-7884 is our number. Our topic this hour, how to talk to a skeptic. Our guest, Don Johnson, who wrote but apparently did not read the book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, an easy to follow guide for natural conversations and effective apologetics. Don, okay, I know this may be a little bit away from where we are, but this might help us in our conversation with folks today. And we're happy to take your calls at 888-318-7884. Why do you think it is that the world is a sea of skeptics now? What happened? It wasn't always that way.
It wasn't always that way. And I hate to blame the Reformation too much, but the Reformation was a big, big deal in more ways than one. It was a worldview crisis. And since, you know, for the past 500 years, I don't know if you caught this just recently, but an NBA star, I think his name is Irving, I think he might play for the Warriors, came out just this week and said he thought the world was flat. And he wasn't coming off that. Right. And the reason he thought the world was flat, well, it was science. But if you dug into it a little bit deeper, it wasn't science. It was, I don't believe what the scientists tell me. It was really a crisis of authority. It wasn't that I've seen the evidence and I'm convinced that the earth is flat.
Oh, yeah.
It was, well, they lie to us all the time. I think that was his actual quote. I mean, people lie to us all the time. And we have this immense crisis of authority and an immense skepticism regarding now, apparently, whether or not the earth is a sphere.
Yes. Yeah, so if there is no authority at all that you actually trust, you're in big trouble because
big trouble.
Nothing, you can't know anything if there's no one to – if you don't trust anyone.
Yeah. And I think you look at the history of ideas since the Reformation, what you see as well – If it's not the church, if Jesus did not give us a church to lend us some authority, where are we going to find it? And we went through rationalism and we went through romanticism and we went through all of these things, science, you know, whatever that means. And they all failed. Ultimately, they all fail for many, many reasons, not the least of which is people are immoral and you can't trust them, but for many reasons, right? They're not meant to be the end all and be all of our epistemology. We're not meant to live that way. And now I think you see, I mean, the crisis in our society is one where people just – I have no idea what is true.
Yeah.
If
you tell me what is true, why should I believe
why
you?
The whole notion of truth is gone.
I think Mr. Irving should get in a boat and go on the ocean though because you can see the actual curve of the earth out there. I get your point, but when you can actually see the curve of the earth.
Yeah, but you read his article. I mean, I thought, have you not been in an airplane? But he said, no, just look. It's right in front of our faces. That was his quote.
Really?
Yeah. It's right in front of our faces, he said.
Well, that's one of the first mistakes of epistemology is to think that seeing is the same as knowing. Knowing is a process of thinking, not just of seeing. And so, anyways. Let's take a little break. We'll come back because we've got a ton of calls. Actually, all but one of the lines are full. If you have a question about how to talk to a skeptic, Don Johnson is our guest today. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Spread the word. Catholic Answers 20 Answers booklets are the perfect tools for catechesis and evangelization. Clear, concise, and easy to carry, the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers Press offers hard facts, powerful arguments and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. We've got the information you need on the Eucharist, salvation, Mary, Islam, Mormonism, and so much more. There are 14 titles in all, with more on the way. The best answers by some of the top Catholic teachers. They're available individually at special bulk prices, or you can get a starter pack of our top 10 at a very special price. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at catholic.com today to get your copies of all the titles in this exciting new series, or ask for them at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 16:13, Jesus asked his disciples about rumors concerning his identity, not to inform himself, but to lead up to his next question, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter responded, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus then assured him that it was not from merely human premises that Peter had declared his messiahship, but that the Father himself had revealed this to him. That it was the Father and not the Son who revealed this shows how profound was the significance of Peter's words, even if Peter had not yet grasped their depth. Today we celebrate the significance. It was on Peter that Jesus built his church, and to Peter that he gave the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Many have tried to deny or downplay this reality, but after 2,000 years plus, the chair of Peter still speaks with Christ's authority and will until the end of time. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Don Johnson, our guest. You can find all about Don at donjohnsonministries.org, donjohnsonministries.org. And Don, our topic today, How to Talk to a Skeptic, also the title of your book, which I read.
Thanks. You're the one.
Which one of
You're
us
You're the
read.
One, so I appreciate it.
888-318-7884 is the number. So how about we go right to calls, Don?
Let's
you
do it.
Good with that? All right.
Yeah.
Is Isabel in Austin, Texas, listening on EWTN. You are on with Don Johnson. Our topic, How to Talk to a Skeptic. What's your question for Don?
Yes, hello. My husband is the world's biggest skeptic, and the current issue that he's skeptical about is how the Bible says that Jesus was Mary's firstborn son or firstborn child, and it's that word firstborn. And of course, I'm Catholic. We as Catholics believe that Jesus was Mary's only child. So why would I talk to him about that? He has thought about, you know, we've been married 30 years, and so, you know, he has thought about Catholicism. Sometimes he goes to church with me, but then his skepticism kicks in and we're back to square one. So maybe you can help me explain that to him.
Isabel, that's great. Now, Isabel, can you confirm for me that your husband is Protestant? Is that correct? An evangelical
that
of some kind?
Correct.
Okay, so your husband goes to a Protestant
Baptist.
Church, Baptist, Bible believer, and so skeptical of Catholicism, but not Christianity, and concerned that the Bible says that maybe Mary had other children because the Bible uses the term firstborn son. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so Isabel, what I would do first, and this is something I bring out actually, can I put in just a quick selfish plug? I bring this out a little bit more.
I'm sorry to roll my eyes at you, Don.
I know. Sai and I have a long history with this. I have an online course that has a Catholic sort of element to it. And I think this is important because when we talk about skeptics, a lot of times, Sai, we're talking about atheist to Christian.
Yeah.
And the atheist to Christian movement is one of worldviews and ideas. And I think the movement from Protestantism to Catholicism is very similar. It's actually a worldview shift. And so what I would do with your husband is actually start to dig in to some of the deeper ideas that they have about what it means to be a Catholic and what God's plan for us is and how it all relates to the his plan from Old Testament to New Testament. I say all that to preface my comment because one of the first rules I have when talking to skeptics is don't just address that first objection, if that makes sense. Don't just jump in, well, hey, here's your answer. You know, why don't you believe? Your husband probably has a lot of philosophical objections to Catholicism that we can get into if we want here on the show. But for now, I would just preface my comment with that. Now, as far as the firstborn son thing, here's what I would say. Jesus is God's firstborn son, and that's why that term is used in the New Testament. If you look at the Old Testament, it's very important to know that Jesus is referred to as God's firstborn, not because God has other children, but the lineage. You see the Old Testament theology, you see how it's always, the firstborn is always very important, and actually the secondborn too, who often takes over from the firstborn, and so we see that in Jesus with Adam and the second. Oh. So Jesus is a second Adam. In a sense, he's the secondborn. But to, you know, sort of jump to the end of your question here, the reason they use that term in the New Testament is because it's making that claim that Jesus is God's firstborn son. In the same way that all of those firstborns, particularly Adam, are firstborns in the Old Testament. So it's a theological thing, Isabel. It's a theological trying to make that point about the Old Testament. It's not at all addressing whether or not Mary had other children. That would be the furthest thing from the gospel writer's mind there, I think.
Does that help you, Isabel?
Because I don't know if you're aware, but Protestants generally say, well, you know, it talks about his brothers and so they figure that Mary had other children after Jesus with St. Joseph, you know.
Yeah, and again, the biblical interpretation thing. I just came into the church in 2015, so I know all about the various biblical interpretation battles that the evangelical Protestant world has, and there's a ton of them. And so when they come to you and say, well, we interpret this verse differently, I don't necessarily jump into that because I would say, well, so do, you know, 10,000 other of your Protestant friends. I mean, you can find a multiple variations of interpretations for almost any verse in the Bible if we're going to be cynical about it. So you can easily translate that as cousins. That's a straight up answer. But again, just be careful about, you know, just trying to give these quick pat answers. Start to dig in. Well, how do we have an authoritative interpretation of the text? How do you treat Jehovah's Witnesses who come to your door as a Protestant evangelical and argue with you about John 1:1? On what basis are you denying their interpretation? Essentially, the Jehovah's Witnesses make the same argument to a Baptist that your Baptist husband is now making to your Catholic, right? And so they're just saying, well, this is my interpretation. Why don't you accept it? Well, you can say the same thing back to them. And so I actually try to step that back and say, well, hold on. How do we interpret any of this stuff? Like authoritatively, how do we understand the Bible? And that I think is a stronger question to ask your husband.
Thanks, Isabel. 888-318-7884 is the number. How to Talk to a Skeptic is the topic. And Don Johnson is our guest. Don, we go to Eugene in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening on 91.3 FM. Eugene, your question for Don Johnson.
Yeah, if God made the earth and man and everything else, who made God?
Yeah, thanks, Eugene. God is not like everything else. And so I think that's the first, just to give a quick answer. This is another thing that almost goes back to the Reformation, the idea that the way we understand the world is the way we have to talk about God. And we don't. We don't have to look around at everything else we see and say, well, that had a designer, that had a creator, so everything in reality must have. That's just a philosophical presupposition that really we don't have any evidence for. I mean, why would I assume that? Why would I assume that everything in all of reality had to have a creator? You're just kind of pulling that out of thin air, really. So God is the type of being that is uncreated. And in fact, you can certainly make an argument that if we have something created, there must be something uncreated. That's a valid argument. But the argument that this thing is created, therefore everything is created, is not a valid argument, if that makes sense.
Eugene?
Yeah.
Did you want?
What's that now?
I didn't know. Was that answer enough for you, or did you have any follow up for Don?
No, that's not enough for me. I mean, it's the Bible is nonfiction. It's something we're just supposed to believe in, like the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, Santa Claus. They're non-existent. It's just something that we'd like to believe in, but there's no real fact.
Now, Eugene, are you saying that that's how we as Christians, that we're to understand the Bible as something like the Tooth Fairy?
I believe that the Bible is for the weak. It's for people to congregate together to feel stronger. And if you are strong within yourself, and there is no proof, it's just something you're supposed to believe. I find that hard to believe. Well, just like I find it hard to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. You never heard about him after his body disappeared. To me, if Jesus did exist, then somebody stole his body because you never heard anything. What did he do after he rose from the dead?
Okay, so just quickly, Eugene, just to that last point, 2,000 years of the biggest religion in the world, I think we have sort of heard what Jesus did after he rose. If he didn't rise from the dead and we never heard from him and we didn't have a religion, then yeah, I would grant that. To your other point, though, Eugene, this is not how Christians understand what the Bible is. It's not something that you just have to believe. It's not like, you know, the book that L. Ron Hubbard presented as evidence for Scientology, a science fiction writer who said, you know what, just believe that Xenu the Intergalactic Warrior appeared here millions of years ago and deposited people in a volcano. Any evidence for that? Absolutely not. No reason to believe that at all. The Bible's not like that. It's not even in the same close to category as that. It's a history book primarily. And so just as we study any other history book, you can look at it and say, well, all right, is this valid? Are these stories made up? Is it what type of literature is it? You can do all that sort of scientific analysis of the Bible, and it stands up perfectly well. If I may ask, Eugene, what do you think? I get you're not a Christian, but what do you think is true about the world? What does the reason and the evidence point us toward? Well, that's a theory as to how reality came in, and you can be a good Catholic and believe in evolution. That's not an issue. What I'm asking is, what do you believe to be true about all of reality? Like, how did we get here? Why are we here? What happens when we die? All that kind of stuff.
Evolution. We all evolved from something to turned into something else. You know, like a tadpole turns into the frog. The egg turns into the chicken.
Sure. Again, this is a theory about how things developed, and you can take parts of it as a Catholic. What I'm more interested in, though, Eugene, is the bigger questions of reality. Again, is there a God? Is matter all that exists? Are you basically just to use sort of a crass term, a meat machine, no different than that table over there, just in kind? Do you understand that's what you are then?
Well, it comes from a bad childhood of being molested, being beaten, praying to God. I went through every religion. I went to a Baptist. I went through Lutheran, Presbyterian. Catholic wouldn't even let me walk through their door because of my questions. They didn't want my negativity. And like I say, through all the turmoil of my childhood, and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and there was never, never, ever an answer. So if God is so great, why is it that so many people suffer, and then the immoral people that molest the children, that steal, that do everything else, they prosper, you know, more than the Christians, I'd say.
Eugene, I'm going to cut in on you there, and I just want to apologize. I know that doesn't mean a whole lot coming from me, but I would like to apologize on behalf of all those Christians that you've experienced over the years. I mean, that's horrendous. There's no excuse for that. I'm sad for the way you were treated. I'm appalled that you couldn't get any answers to your questions. I mean, this is why me and Cy are here today, actually, is because there are good answers to all of those questions, and it's sad that you didn't get any. But let me assure you that there certainly are those answers, and that if you keep listening to shows like this, we're glad to help you provide those. And it just strikes me that ultimately it seems, Eugene, if we were to sit down and have a coffee or whatever, that many of your intellectual arguments are actually not as strong as maybe you think they are, and that deep down inside there are some good answers there.
Thank you, Eugene. This hour, How to Talk to a Skeptic. Don Johnson, author of How to Talk to a Skeptic, is our guest. 888-318-7884 is the number. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live, and we'll be right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Widely regarded as the premier magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization, our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine features the articles you want by the authors you know and respect. Year after year, Catholic Answers magazine has been bringing the very best teachers the Catholic world has to offer into thousands of homes on a regular basis. Top-notch writers like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Mark Brumley, Tim Staples, Carlo Brissard, and Matt Nelson. The list goes on and on. It makes a perfect gift for family and friends, students, priests, and seminarians. Just about anybody you know. And of course, don't forget about a subscription for yourself. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com to subscribe today. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Already halfway done with the first hour.
Time flies when I'm hanging out with Cy Kellett.
Yeah, when the knuckleheads get together, time flies. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our topic this hour, how to talk to a skeptic. And if I may, Don, it seemed to me that you were practicing what you preach there a little bit, because what I see in your, you know, your books and your videos is this idea that talking to a person is the more important thing than just giving a quick answer to a question. You can dispose of the question very quickly, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I learned this over many, many years of mistakes. I mean, when I started out doing radio and taking calls from gentlemen, you know, just like that, I would have given him a quick answer. I would have been like, "Well, let me just tell you what the answer is here. I've got philosophy, I've got science, I've got all this stuff." But it never worked well.
Yeah.
Frankly, I would come away, they'd get angry, I'd get angry, and I'd frustrated. And so rather than do that, over the many years, I just started asking a lot of questions. And yeah, I think that was that was an example of how, I mean, I kind of do that second nature now. I'm not going to jump in and argue about that. But I appreciate that, Cy.
So that's what you talk about in that online course on personal evangelization. And I'm not trying to,
to
sell anything for you. But that's the point, is you're talking to a person. It's not like a wasted step to get to know a person. That's exactly what Christ has called us to do.
Yeah, right? And I think I was just talking about this on my show yesterday, actually. A lot of the What do we call it in the culture now? Like the problems. Everybody's so angry and they're so quick. I think we've really depersonalized each other in many ways. And I suppose, you know, all these online things, as much as, hey, we're doing great on Facebook and all that.
Yeah.
But we do tend to take that sort of interpersonal step out of it. Like, I just see an idea here, or I just see a political position.
Right.
I just see you as part of this larger group. But I don't actually see you. I'm not actually interacting with you and your hurts and your struggles and where you're coming from and your background. And, you know, I was talking on the show about some rappers, actually. And that there's a lot of these up-and-coming young black Christian rappers who are just making huge inroads. I mean, winning Grammys. But they say some things that, you know, as a white, you know...
Foggy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, but...
Well, no, it's true. And so people look at me, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm actually kind of a fan. But part of it is I spent years working in the inner city. And so I came to really love that culture and understand that, you know what, this is a, you're focusing on something that is so insignificant in the big run. To see these guys doing all this great stuff, we should be celebrating. But it comes from trying to understand the person. And so, yeah, I think I appreciate that side. That's what we're doing.
888-318-7884 is the number. How to talk to a skeptic is the topic for the hour. We go to Alyssa in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Alyssa, what's your question for Don Johnson? Hey, Alyssa, are you there with us? Okay, well, Alyssa, we'll come back to you. If you're there on YouTube Live, watching on YouTube Live in Fredericksburg, Virginia, Macelle is... Wait, that's... Okay.
This is what happens when I come on the show.
So I know. The phones are a mess now because you're here. You did that. But you know that people on – let me just tell you this, Don. People call us who are watching Facebook and YouTube Live, but they also write questions. So let me just read a question to you. Okay?
Sounds good.
And then you answer – Anthony, who's watching us on Facebook Live, writes the following there on Facebook Live. The woman I am dating grew up non-religious. She doesn't understand why Christianity or religion appeals in general. She has nothing against it and is happy I have solace in it. I would love to have help starting a conversation with her that can lead her to Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. I want her to join me in our faith.
I feel like Anthony's sort of a plant, and I did not plant Anthony. But
why,
this
that's
is,
the perfect question for you?
This is the perfect question, because I spend a lot of time in my approach to evangelism. And again, I don't want to slog this stuff too much, but... You notice I'm reading your comment here too, Anthony. She doesn't understand why religion appeals, and she's happy that Anthony has found solace. And what you need to understand here is she has an understanding of what religion is that you don't, or at least you hopefully don't. She's understanding religion as a consumer product, as something that you go to the store and you pick and choose among all the varieties, only based on what it does for you. I mean, this is why we buy stuff, right? So you go and I know you buy your orange hair color because you like that tint of orange. I don't, but hey, I'm glad you found something that works for you.
You know, people can see us on video. They know all you're right, not telling the truth, Don.
But this whole idea, if you've ever been in retail, you know that the first rule of retail is the customer's always right. So if you want to try to sell something, and I've tried to sell a lot of things that people didn't want, you know what? I valued them too high. It's my fault. It's not theirs. Well, if you approach religion like that, Anthony, if you approach religion as a consumer product, and you try to present a bunch of meeting felt needs things, right? Like, well, but come to my church because whatever. We have a great coffee bar. We've got a great band. You really enjoy the liturgy. We've got a great thing for kids. And frankly, if you look at most websites these days, especially – I'm not sure. The Catholics are sort of catching up on this, I think. But you look at your average evangelical church website, what's it going to have? It's going to have all those programs. Here's 27 reasons why you should come to our church. But the presupposition there is that you choose churches based on what it does for you. And I think that's a mistake. Actually, I think I'm going to be so bold as to say I know that's a mistake. Not that you're not meeting people's needs. That's not the mistake. Not that you don't have a great band. That's not the mistake, or even a good coffee bar. But the mistake is understanding religion as a consumer product. Religions are not consumer products. They are worldviews. Not all worldviews are religions, but all religions are worldviews. And what I mean by that is they answer the big questions of life. Those questions that I was asking our friend Eugene earlier. Why are we here? How do we get here? What happens when we die? How should we then live? Every religion answers those questions. And as such, the only question to ask of a religion, ultimately, the only one, is whether or not it's true. If it's true, you must accept it. If it's not, you must reject it. It's much more like a roadmap, right? My wife and I went on this epic road trip last summer, Si. In fact, I missed several shows because of this. But before we went on the thing, I went down to AAA, and I just want you to envision this happening at AAA, the automobile club. I don't know if anybody does this anymore, but I wanted some brochures. Imagine if they had taken me into the back room, and on the room was six different maps, and each map had an adherent. Like, here's a guy who believes that this is the right map. But they're all different, but they all claim to be of the Western U.S., right? This one's got islands, this one's got mountains, this one's got swamp, this one has flat prairie land or whatever. Well, and they say, you don't pick whichever one you want. Oh, well, you should take this one because it gives you a shorter commute to work or whatever. You should take this one because you get to swim. Well, no, I mean, I like the color of – no, you're not going to pick a map. There's only one reason to take a map, because it's accurate, right? You want the accurate picture of reality. Well, that's what religions are. Religions are pictures of reality. So, Anthony, what I would say to you is you got to bring back the conversation away from her felt needs, frankly. It's got to be what is true. If Catholicism is true, you should become Catholic, bottom line. And frankly, that's – you know, I became Catholic, Cy, not because I liked Catholicism. I've learned to like it. I love it now. But at the beginning, I'm like, this is not all that appealing to me, frankly.
Right.
be honest. It's going to cause all of these problems in my life. I'm not a big, you know, liturgy guy. I don't know. The homilies aren't that great or whatever. I don't really like it in that sense. But it's true. So what am I going to do? I got to become Catholic. And I think that's I would take the conversation back there, Anthony. What's true? What's not? And start at that point.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you for everybody watching on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, or Periscope. We're there pretty much every day now. And these are archived as well. So if you want to watch a show that was recorded maybe last week or whatnot, you can find it in those places. We're ready to go now to Alyssa in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Alyssa, you are on with Don Johnson. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a friend who he doesn't really see the reason for having a religion. He thinks that anything good you could get from a religion, you could better get from a proper form of governance, specifically anarchism, because that's his chosen form of government or non-government. And I just wanted to know how I could bring the topic to a conversation to a more fruitful.
Yeah, so Alyssa, yeah, I appreciate that. Your friend thinks that whatever good we could get from religion could be provided another way. Is that correct?
Yeah, specifically by a proper form of social order.
Yeah, okay. I mean, practically speaking, we could jump to that and say, let's see how that's worked out in history. But again, I wouldn't jump to that. I wouldn't jump to that even as much as you might want to. Like, all right, how are all those anarchist groups, you know, working out amongst themselves? No, again, you got to go back to what I was just talking about. Ultimately, religion is not here to provide you a system of morality. It's just not. In fact, C.S. Lewis was asked to give a talk on this one time. And the subject of the talk was, can we be good without God? And before he got to that subject, I can't remember the name of this talk, but C.S. Lewis, he did this long introduction saying how disgusted he was that they even brought the topic to him because he said, what do you guys think? It sounds to me as if, you guys don't care whether or not Christianity is true. It sounds like you've been listening to all these foolish preachers, and that's the term he used, all these foolish preachers who are constantly telling you how good Christianity is for society, and you have forgotten that Christianity is not a patent medicine. It's not here to make you feel good. It's not here to even provide a system of morality. It's here because it's true. It claims to tell you what the universe is like. So that one's back up there. Now, Alyssa, I want to give you a little secondary thing, though. Any system of morality, and this is one of those things where if you get it and you can run with it, do it. But if not, don't waste your time on it. But if you're looking for a basis of morality, I would put Christianity up against every other one. And Lewis actually also uses this as an argument for Christianity. He says, if there is morality at all, if there is a standard for right and wrong and in existence, right? If morality is not just a myth or a social construct, then we have to have a standard for that basis, for that morality, right? We have to have something that tells us this is bedrock, this is right, this is wrong. No other worldview adequately provides that. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't attempts at it. There are attempts. But adequately, which worldview actually provides us a basis for morality? I think you want to dig into that. You'll find, again, it's Christianity. And ultimately, it's Catholicism that is that basis for morality. So that's the direction I would go, Alyssa.
Okay. He doesn't really believe in morality. He's one of those people that says he doesn't believe in morality, but acts like he does.
Yeah. Here's what I would do, Melissa. Smack him upside the head a couple times. Steal his keys. go and tell lies about him to his boss. And no, don't do that. But as an
I see where you're going.
Ask him.
Yeah,
ask him if he thought that was okay.
Morality. So you're saying it's easy to have the argument that morality doesn't exist until someone does something immoral to you.
That's exactly right. Francis Schaeffer used to do this. He had a place called Le Bray out in the mountains of Switzerland. This was back in the 60s and 70s. And all these relativists, you know, the hippies would come out there and they would say, I don't believe, Francis, I don't believe in morality. That's all just myth. And he would steal their backpack, you know, first thing. And they'd be like, hey, you can, why not? And I think, you know, it's just sort of a thing. Really? Nobody, you're right. Nobody acts as if morality is subjective. Nobody actually lives that out. And you might want to ask, why is that? If it's true that there is no such thing as morality, why can nobody live it out? That doesn't make sense. I mean, why do you have to live this myth? Why isn't it a free-for-all? Why isn't it? And really, and this is the problem with anarchy, if you want to get into that, anarchy is a problem because people do bad things to each other. The reason we need some form of governance is that people do bad things to each other, and something's got to control it. And the less self-control we have, the more outside control we have to have, unfortunately. And so that's sort of how that plays out.
Thanks, Alyssa. The topic today, how to talk to a skeptic. We got one more segment with Don Johnson, and then Carlo Broussard will be here for the second hour today. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Today, our faith is under attack like never before. Skeptics of all stripes are trying to undermine the very basis of our faith, the revelation that God has given us in Jesus Christ. Some critics argue that Jesus never even existed, and they've influenced tens of millions of people today. Others have argued that we shouldn't trust the canonical Gospels because there were dozens of other Gospels in the early church. And many more have claimed that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were all written long after the ministry of Christ, and that the evangelist felt free to simply invent stories and sayings of Jesus to suit their own goals. No wonder so many people today doubt their faith or have lost it altogether. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of these charges. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released a new DVD by Jimmy Akin titled Why You Can Trust the Gospels. It's a powerful presentation in which Jimmy takes on the skeptics and refutes them point by point, revealing how evidence from non-Christian sources and even tiny details in the Gospels that you've never noticed all show how the Gospels are true and accurate records of what our Savior said and did. To make your donation and get a free copy of Jimmy Akin's new DVD, Why You Can Trust the Gospels, visit Catholic.com and click the Why You Can Trust the Gospels banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Why You Can Trust the Gospels banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Don Johnson is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number. Why God Still Matters is next hour with Carlo. How to talk to a skeptic this hour. Don, we're taking – a lot of people around here are taking the 20 Answers Challenge. Catholic Answers made 20 of these 20
this
Answers booklets about everything. I mean that you would – well, not everything, but all the most important – the 20 most
maybe
important
not
things
everything
to know about the Catholic faith or about morality or about Mary or whatever. So those are good. I haven't read them all. I've started to read them.
I'm working my way through.
Are you really? So
yeah.
You're taking the 20 Answers Challenge with us.
I'm hoping to make it through. I read a couple of Trent's books here, Jehovah's Witnesses.
Why would you not make it through? You like, get hit by a bus or something, or you think you'll quit?
No,
you're not going to quit, are you?
Come on. I guess I got to do it now.
Well, here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 20 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock the price in half, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent or Easter season. So that's by June 4th. I intend to do that, to be done by June 4th. You can get this half off on the regular books or the ebooks. But then we, even though you're paying half, we're taking $10 and giving that in merchandise to St. Paul Street Evangelization, so they can go hit the streets and do their Catholic evangelization, which they do politely and with great dignity. They're really good at what they do. And so it's kind of a triple win. Those who take the challenge win. St. Paul Street Evangelization wins, and the church wins. It's a win-win-win. And the way you get yours is you just go to Catholic.com, and you can shop there and get the half-off deal for the rest of this month, or you can call 888-291-8000 for more information. Take the Catholic Answers 20 question challenge with me and Don by June 4th. Get all of those read. Don will take more calls on the topic of how to talk to a skeptic. We now go to Marcel, I believe, in Fredericksburg, Virginia, watching on YouTube. You are on with Don Johnson. What's your question?
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
All right. So I have this friend. She used to go to my church, and I hadn't seen her in a while. I just found out the other day that she converted to Judaism. I noticed that she started dating this boy who's Jewish. So I don't know if it's because of him. Exactly. She also told me that she had a dream that she was, I forget what it's called, the place, I can't remember what it's called, but it's where Jewish people gather, kind of like church. But
the synagogue?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And so she told me a little about it and how she doesn't really believe in Jesus. I was wondering what I should tell her, like, if she should come back to the Catholic Church or if she is good where she's at with being Jewish.
Okay. Thanks. Maciel, I think, is your name. Thank you. Well, no. Obviously, you need to come back to Catholic faith. Yeah, we never want to say, oh, well, you know, you're close enough or whatever. Again, this is one of those things where it's probably, if I had to guess, you know, given my experience, it's probably not one of those situations where she intellectually dug into all of the theology and how the Old Testament fulfills the New Testament or doesn't, or why Jesus isn't the Messiah. She's got a boyfriend who's Jewish. I suspect that's 98% of what's going on there. That would be my guess. And it would be important then for you to discover that, to really get to know what's going on there and what are your reasons and what, you know, what's underlying this journey. I suspect it's mostly emotional, psychological, relational. I doubt that it's intellectual. Having said that, if you can get her to the intellectual, and that's what you want to do, you want to say, listen, we need to have good reasons to switch religions, don't we? Beyond, well, my boyfriend is this. I mean, we got to have better reasons than that. Ultimately, if it's a matter of truth or falsehood, we need to have reasons for accepting a religion. I mean, again, this is not like hairspray. We're not just picking stuff off the shelf. I mean, this is a big deal. And so then I would get, if you can get her to that point of studying the theology, I mean, Catholicism is so Jewish in many ways. I mean, I was a guy who, in studying the Old Testament, realized that God's plan was clearly fulfilled for the Jews in the Catholic Church. Not in Protestantism, not just in Jesus, but actually in the Catholic Church. And so there is a lot of great resources on that. I've got some on my website, Catholic.com, I'm sure. How the Old Testament is fulfilled in Jesus. Again, if you can get her to that, that would be great. But again, I would personally just sort of dig into getting her to think about, is, you know, my boyfriend believes this. Is that good enough reason to really switch? And I hopefully that's kind of evident that it's not, but...
Thank you, Maciel. We go to Margaret May in Fairfield, Maryland, listening on Presence. Margaret May, you are on with Don Johnson. What's your question?
Yes, good evening. So my question is about, you know, more of the intellectual elitists that try and say that, oh, there is no God and science proves that there isn't a God. And I have heard that the creator of quantum mechanics definitely believed that there was a God. So my question is, from a scientific standpoint and kind of basic information, how to be able to address how string theory and or quantum mechanics helps to point to that there is an intelligence behind all of creation?
Margaret May, thanks for the call. I'm not going to be the guy to answer the questions about string theory or quantum mechanics or any of those things. You had who did you have on? Stacy Trasankos
on Friday. And I'll suggest that show to you. You can go get that at the archives at Catholic.com. Stacy Trasankos, a scientist herself, did a whole hour with us last Friday, second hour.
And here's where I don't get into the specifics of that. But in my approach, what I would suggest is, and Stacy's really good on this, the foundations of science itself, not just that this scientist happened to be Christian, but science itself, the whole endeavor, is a very Christian endeavor. In fact, it's impossible without the Christian worldview. I do, again, have some articles on this, donjohnsonministries.org, how science isn't possible without certain presuppositions. And frankly, Christianity is the only one that provides all of those presuppositions, things like our senses provide us with valid information and nature is reasonable and all. There's a whole bunch of philosophical presuppositions that, for instance, atheism simply doesn't provide. And it's one of the reasons that science is floundering a little bit in certain parts of the culture is because there's not really a good way to do it from an atheist perspective. So I would take that approach. I would say the whole thing, science itself, is a very Christian endeavor.
And could I, Margaret May, suggest Stacy's book to you, Stacy Trasankos. Her book is Particles of Faith. Take a look at that book. I think it'll be helpful to you. Thanks so much for your call. We're going to go now to Andrea in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Andrea, you are on with Don Johnson.
Hi, Mr. Johnson. Hi, Cy.
Hi.
I was an avid Catholic Answers listener when Patrick was on, and you are doing a wonderful job as the new host.
I think you mean doesn't she mean
she's
better?
She's talking to me,
Don. She said better.
Back off.
I think
she's
what you mean,
Andrea. Don thinks you're talking
better
to him.
Job, Patrick.
Thank you. Those are very kind words. Thank you, Andrea.
And thank you for taking my call. My question is my fiance. He's not religious. He's not anything. He's just kind of, you know, a citizen of the earth, of the world. So he was supposedly raised Christian. I don't know if he's ever been baptized, but whenever we get into a discussion, he always thinks that I use religion as a crutch. And he always says that, you know, like, religion is a man-made thing. And so that's the reason why we have it, because otherwise we would be barbaric people and we would kill each other. And so that's why people use it to control the population and to control our behavior. And so you can, you know, it's just one of those things where that's how they use it in society. And so I'm really having a hard time, like, sharing my faith with him, because everything goes back to, well, mostly the Eucharist and the mystery of the Eucharist, but a lot of it goes back to me sharing faith with him, and sometimes he wants to have a discussion that's not religiously based or biased.
Andrea, I got to let Don jump in here because we're running short of time, and I don't want him to run out of time to answer you.
Andrea, I would say two things real quick. One, if you don't want to use the term religion, fine. I'd say get rid of it. Start using the term worldview instead and just talk about big ideas. What are your answers when you're talking to your fiancé? How does he answer those big questions of life? And just have a discussion on that level. Which answers actually have the evidence behind them? Get rid of the whole talk about religion if it's going to be a problem, because he probably isn't understanding religion correctly. Secondly, you could dig into the history, as some have done, and just discover whether or not religion is a man-made thing. No, it existed before humanity. So you could go the scientific route, but I would just maybe just get rid of the name.
But again, it goes back to your idea that you start with a dialogue to find out what is your worldview and how do you come by that worldview, so that I can share what my worldview is and how I come by that worldview, and we can
absolutely
get to the truth, not just get to two different opinions.
Yeah, exactly right.
Don Johnson. DonJohnsonMinistries.org is where you can find him. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Cy.
It was a real pleasure to be back with a fellow knucklehead next hour, Carlo Broussard. Why God still matters. God does still matter. Right, Carlo? I see Carlo over there. He's going to tell us why. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.